rush hours. Summer off.
Welcome to the Rush Hour Summer Off podcast, where we look at years gone by and the big events and moments that have happened in our lifetime. On today's podcast, Jude, Wendell and I are looking at the late 60s, including the year that I was born, 1968. Lots happening around them, including Woodstock, the moon landing, and where we start today's podcast, an iconic moment at the 1968 Olympics. Boys, 1968. 1968 was the year, on the 7th of December, I was born.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you weren't even like an itch in your father's trousers by then, either of you. When were you born, Del?
1974.
74, so 6 years later. And when were you? 1980. Yeah, so 12 years. I was going into year seven when you were coming.
What actually happened in 68?
A lot happened in 1968 when you actually go back and research it. What about the US athletes who stand at the Summer Olympics in Mexico City and with their silent demonstration against racial discrimination in the United States? I mean, one of the most iconic moments, I suppose, in Olympic and certainly world history.
I remember a little bit about it.
That's just still, yeah, it's an iconic moment. They've got the statue now at one of the universities there and things like that in the States. I mean, Peter Norman, I mean, it was...
Ah, yes.
Like, we look at back at now and celebrate it, but to be honest, his career went downhill after that because he was shunned by the Australian media and, you know...
So he finished third, so he was on the dice with the two...
He was second.
He was on the dice with the two black athletes.
And he was the one who chose Del. They'd forgotten a pair of gloves. They wanted to do the statement, and he said, you take the left one, you take the right, so... It's just one of the great moments in history. But the fact that we didn't celebrate him, and now we do, which he should have been celebrated all his career. Those two guys, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, they carried his coffin as well.
Well, they were condemned in America too, so all three of them got absolutely hammered.
Yeah. It's sad. Like obviously, you know, we talk about politics and sport mixing at times and should it or shouldn't, but it's been happening all through and... That was one of the amazing stands.
Well, the protest shocked many people who felt it damaged the spirit of the Olympics and unnecessarily brought politics into the games, which is what you just said. They awarded the gold and bronze medals in the 200-meter race, then bowed their heads and each raised a black club fist during the playing of the Star Spangled Banner. The protests didn't stop with their fists. They also wore black socks and no shoes. On their clothes were badges of the Olympic Project for Human Rights, a group dedicated against racial segregation and racism in sports. So they were ahead of the game, weren't they?
They were ahead of the game. It's so strong what they did, but then, you know, you still pay a price for it, but at some stage you need to make a stand. That's what they did.
They certainly did. Well, 2 days after that event, Smith and Carlos were expelled from Team USA. When they returned home, they were hailed as heroes by members of the African-American community, but no one else.
Yeah, how far have we come since then?
Yeah, look, we've tried to improve. But it's hard for people to change, you know, their mindset on what's happened in yesteryear. You know, at least we have those conversations now. But, you know, we're still going about
it. That's 54 years ago. I'm still talking about it.
But I'm positive about the next generation. But there's still, there's a lot of people set in their ways, aren't they?
Slowly but surely, one of those scenarios, I think. Well, boys, changing the subject and to a slightly lesser or lighter situation. Star Trek airs America's first television with interracial kissing going on, spaceships and all that sort of jazz. So Star Trek.
Captain Kirk.
I remember Captain Kirk, but there was a bit of an uproar here, weren't there? Like, it was unusual you saw, you know, a black and a white person kiss.
Well, it says here, camera. Enterprise Captain James Kirk, a white man played by William Shatner, who's a brilliant actor, was forced to kiss Nichelle Nichols' character, Lieutenant Noya Uhura, a black woman. That was the first time ever that a white man kissed a black woman on telly. It just seems
I wasn't aware of that.
Seems ridiculous now.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Absolutely.
It's all part and parcel now.
Shatner is reported to have purposefully ruined all the alternative takes.
Well, they asked him to shoot it again, did they?
To air the kiss.
No, I think, because they did two sides. They did like...
An alternative shot. Just in case we don't run that, dude.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Goodness.
So he ruined all those ones, so he makes sure that they did get done.
That's right.
Is that just sloppy kisses? How did he ruin them?
I suppose so. Where I come from, size, shape, or colour makes no difference.
Yeah, so he was good. Exactly. He was one of the good ones.
What a legend.
Yeah.
What about Boston Legal? Did you ever see that show with Shatner in it? One of the great shows.
Great show.
Have you ever seen it?
Never watched
it. Mate, go back and watch it. There's years worth of great stuff there. Yeah. But it made me sort of think of those iconic moments on telly. What about for you guys? What was that iconic moment on Australian TV, or at the moment you just go, I'm in love.
I think for me, Grease, because, you know, you had the music, but also Olivia Newton-John, like what she wore and her character, you know, like.
It's my wife's favourite film.
Yeah.
She's indoctrinated our young girls and watching Grease and Grease 2, and I'm like.
It's so
Grease good. Grease 2 is no good.
Grease 2 is no good.
Yeah, it's
please.
No good. But Olivia Newton-John, I think everyone had her poster on their wall. Mm. Certainly young Australian men did.
Yes.
And
even some girls.
Even Xanadu was all right, you know what I mean?
Princess Leia in Star Wars. There was always that element of it as well.
Yeah, she
with
was
the old cinnamon buns as their ears.
Yeah,
cinnamon buns.
I mean, I remember her when Jabba the Hutt had her on, like in a sort of on a lead, you know, and she wore not a lot, and it was a magical
just
moment.
A gold outfit, wasn't it? I think.
Sorry,
what?
But I also remember this show. Love. Exciting and new. Come aboard. Now, they've tried to come back now and say there's another love boat, but there's nothing quite like it, where people went on a boat, so much happened, but there was love and people got together, and if they were fighting by the end of the cruise, they were happy again. And I just remember sitting down as a family and watching that show at 7:30 on a Sunday night and just going to bed happy.
Yeah.
You know, it was a much simpler place, wasn't it, back then? You know what I mean?
TV dinner.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Jude?
I guess growing up, I loved some of the big shows and big movies and things like that, but I can't think of any specific moment that was just like blew me away.
What about the Dukes of Hazzard? What about Daisy Duke?
Yeah.
0.05 on the side of the car or something.
They got away with a lot, you know.
Yeah, the General Lee.
Who was the police officer trying to catch him?
Boss Hogg
was the main break, and then there was
Roscoe
Pick Gold Train.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. So there you go.
Yeah.
TV, that's when it all started for us. We ended up getting
MASH was on TV
MASH was good,
all the time when I got home from school.
Yeah. MASH was fantastic.
Gilligan's Island.
Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch was
good. Did you guys watch that?
Yeah, of course.
Doctor Who?
My brother was so scared of the Daleks. You know, the ones that
Exterminate.
He would freak out when those came on.
You know what did freak me out?
Your brother needs to harden up.
He does need to a little bit.
They were actually just garbage bins upside down.
Yeah, when you think of it now, they're not very scary. A movie that scared the bejesus out of me was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Why?
But not so much the movie, the child catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And hopefully a few of our listeners are nodding along now going, I was the same. When that bit came on, when he'd creep around trying to find the children.
That doesn't really.
Can you remember that?
The child catcher.
Yeah. You might have been a bit too old for it.
I don't remember the child catcher, but I remember Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. He had the flying.
The flying car.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a genius, this play. Anyway, so that is TV shows. What about Boeing? They introduced the first 747 jumbo jet. I mean, we take it for granted now, you know, getting on a plane and traveling all around the world, but this was really, really big. A massive aircraft was indeed an aviation design milestone, more than 6 stories tall. It seated 374 passengers and weighed 300 tons.
It still staggers me those things get off the ground.
Exactly. Just the fuel they use and the power that they need to and how anything can go wrong, but they just seem to, 9 times out of 10, they seem to be pretty sweet.
But the fact that there would have been smoking sections at the back of the plane and stuff like that.
I mean, the smoking section was like the last 3 rows.
Yeah.
But there was no curtain, there was no door or anything. Yeah. It was just.
But wasn't it late 70s that they banned smoking in like hospitals as well? Like you can imagine.
I think you could smoke pretty much anywhere up until the 80s.
Yeah, you're right.
Can you imagine the doctor looking at checking out, they just go, hang on, hold on. Just reviewing your charts.
My mum was a bit stressed when she was pregnant with me and she was told by the doctor to have a cigarette to relax. Doctors used to be on the posters for cigarettes. Doctor's orders. So it's still no relic, though. Amazingly, it remains a major player among global airlines more than 50 years on. And I remember my dad was setting up Travelodge hotels at the, like, 1970, 1971. By the time we sort of left before I was 5, we'd go for a day trip to Tokyo Airport and watch the big planes, like these Boeings, these big jumbos.
Like those ones where you sit and just, they fly right over you.
Pretty much.
Oh.
And that would be our day. That would be a day with Dad. I remember it so well.
Did you love it?
Oh, I absolutely loved it because we got naughty food. You know, we got milkshakes and cream buns and all that sort of jazz because mum wasn't around. And dad would take my brother and I, and we'd watch planes arrive and take off.
Was it good bonding?
Yeah. I remember it. I mean, I'm 54 now, so nearly 50 years on.
Has a big impact.
I remember that, exactly. The ability to carry far more passengers than ever before certainly changed the way that people thought about getting around the world. Yeah. So the Boeing introducing the first 747 all there in 1968.
So, I mean, talking about the big plane. So I was lucky enough to take my kids to California on the big plane, and they just loved it. It was the first time we'd flown over there. But my wife
up the front or down the back?
No, down the back. But my wife was already in the States, so I flew over to the US. They'd never been on long haul. I did manage to fly our American babysitter, who was just heading home. I said, look.
The housekeeper?
No. She was going on her way over there. And she just, like I said, look, if you can fly with me on these dates, it'd help me out because I don't know how they're going to go. If one's going to the toilet, what do I do? Two young girls. I didn't know what to do.
You're a terrible father. So you needed help.
In the end, literally, they were the best kids on there because they had movies. They were fine.
Like, they were getting fed.
It was actually a dream flight. I'm like, just paid for her to just get across there. But it was actually great fun because we got there and then my wife and I were able to just go for dinner together. We hadn't seen each other for a week or two.
Oh, so she stayed on for a little while.
She stayed on for a couple of days and then we went off. So,
now, I'm not asking you this question on that flight because your wife wasn't there, but have you ever joined the Mile High Club?
No, I haven't. Are you?
Del?
No. No.
Oh, you've got this. You got a smile.
You, so, like, this is Cheshire
grinning,
Cat.
He's grinning like
so
a
you
Cheshire
the
Cat.
Question, so I'm not sure if
that was a loaded question because you tell us about your Mile High.
Absolutely not. I certainly have not. What about
Why are you
Del?
Winking at me?
Del?
Oh, mate, you know what? I love those Qantas planes. And I tell you the best.
Do you always go first class or business class if you're a wallaby or a kangaroo?
Yes, yeah.
In Australian teams?
Yeah, you do. Okay. But look,
upstairs.
Yeah, upstairs in the bubble and that. And I'll tell you, it was better with rugby union. I mean, the league was fine too, but with rugby union because...
sponsored by him.
Sponsored, but also you'd have to have... Eddie Jones didn't mind you having a drink on the first, the first part of the trip. And then after that, it'd be a free-for-all. And what, which was good, like more
did
so.
They cut you off? Did they cut you off service?
Not really. They were not really good. No. That, back in the day where they didn't really cut you off, and because of who we were.
That's why Booney's record was just.
And we're being really nice.
Be respected.
But also, like some of the hostesses, they were like Kiwi girls and Aussie girls in Sydney and that. So you'd have fun on that. We'd pump the music up and that. It was great. It was like.
So you had your own little plane upstairs.
Yeah, because we'd be all booked out because you used to have like a squad of 50 or something, especially the Wallabies, with management and that. And then the blokes who weren't up there in the bubble, they were downstairs, so they probably couldn't sort of go as loud. But it was great fun. It was like, it was just, there's plenty that was going on then.
Just back on Booney. I mean, that record from Australia to London, 45 cans.
52,
sorry. Have you spoken to any of the cricketers?
I've spoken to Booney about that.
What? Tell us.
And Doug Walters. So Booney, obviously very happy about it. Great decision to have a crack and won it. Doug Walters, who the record holder at the time that Booney broke, doesn't believe it's a record because he reckons he dribbled them. And he had, and he also says, I had 52 beers on the flight, but I also drank in the lounge beforehand and in the lounge when we stopped halfway through. So I had over 60. They're not counted. So as far as Doug Walters is concerned, he is a record holder.
I love the fact that they all each had to have sessions with him. Like they come in and you're sort of just... lift them up and
there's a lot of dribbling. A lot of dribbling with Booney in the last few, which Doug Walters disputes as actual beers. So.
And they tried to keep it away from the coaches at the time, didn't they?
Well, of course, for
professionalism.
Exactly right. Now, talking about going in the air, but going even further, Apollo 11 moon landings happened on the 20th of July in 1968. Neil Armstrong became the first man to walk on the moon, one of the most iconic cultural events of that particular year. Landed with Armstrong and lunar module pilot Buzz Aldrin. It was the fifth mission by NASA's Apollo program.
Let's have a listen.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now, whilst technology was defying gravity, David Bowie was soaring through the charts with Space Oddity. There were some of the most defining events during the summer of 1969. So, do you believe it actually happened, guys? The moon landing?
Yeah,
I do.
Because it gets disputed all the time.
Aren't there?
About shadows and stuff, and they reckon it was all done.
The flag wasn't,
fluttering or whatever, or it was completely fluttering or something. Anyway, they reckon that it didn't happen. It happened in some sort of Hollywood.
That's a conspiracy that comes out every year at this sort of time.
What do you think?
I reckon America was so desperate to beat the Russians that they just got it done in
so
a...
So you reckon it was a Hollywood production?
Yep.
No.
Yep. And a complete waste of time and money as well.
You reckon we've been there since?
Yeah, I think we've been there since. I think we've got there now, but back in the late 60s, it wasn't happening. Oh. I mean, to show you how stupid the NASA
but
people
you're,
were.
You're gullible for a good conspiracy theory, aren't you?
That is true. I am open to it. But, you know, show how stupid the NASA people were. They spent $20 million trying to work out a pen that could actually write in space. And the Russians came up with it. You know what they used?
What?
A pencil.
Oh. Yeah.
It's exactly, they were so far up their own asses, NASA, and I still think they are now, spending way too much money on space, that the Russians beat them with a pencil. There you go.
Just on David Bowie, how good was he? Mate, I love the fact that it was very androgynous at the time. Yeah. And he was.
I think he had a crack at absolutely everything.
He was.
Songs, music, men, women, everything in between.
He was very cool.
He had a crack at it.
Yeah. I mean, who was his wife for ages? She was a supermodel.
Yeah, she was.
What's her name?
Who's his wife?
People are shouting names and stuff at us now.
Iman. Iman, that's her. Yeah.
Outstanding.
Because there was Naomi Campbell and then Iman.
We have Naomi Campbell as well.
No, but in and around that sort of scene.
Oh, yeah,
scene,
in terms
know.
Of supermodels.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course he had some big hits as well, including this one. So where were the spiders?
While the fly tried to break our bones. Big star, what a cracking song.
Fantastic. And he was probably the first one, I suppose, David Bowie, to put the makeup on.
Yes.
And to, you know, dress the way he wanted to dress.
He pushed the boundaries. And it's, yeah.
Game changer right there.
Certainly was. And what about the last one, guys? Woodstock.
Well, what an event.
Oh,
I mean,
festival, yeah.
I just saw the footage of it. And, you know, you look back at some of the artists that were there, Del, Jimi Hendrix, Santana.
Yes.
Joe Cocker. Rex Hunt used to say to AFL, when he'd call, he'd go, he's been higher than Joe Cocker.
How high do you reckon they were?
Oh, they were
completely off their chops.
Yes, mate. It was, and it's play on. It was like six to go, play on, mate. Yeah, that's when festivals and music and a good time was a good time. No judgment. No, definitely no sniffer dogs around there.
People were gathering to hear the voices of their generation. Those like themselves, ordinary, but with the belief that there was more to the world than the chaos of war around them.
Yeah.
400,000 people attended.
400,000.
400,000.
Ah,
you'd be going bad if you didn't get one there. Right?
What about you guys? Best concert music memories? Know how much you love your live music, Jude?
Yeah, I've had some amazing opportunities here and there. I went up to Manchester to see Franz Ferdinand, and then just had lucky enough to go to different stuff when I lived at the Annandale here in Sydney, and just see the likes of, say, Kings of Leon between two bigger day outs between Gold Coast and Sydney. They felt a bit scratchy in the Gold Coast one, so they wanted to tune up. And one of the guys, the sound guys, worked at the Annandale. So he goes, come in and just practice. Anyway.
Wow.
And I got the call because I knew the guys who owned the Dale at the time.
Of course you did.
They actually owned the Music and Booze Fair Hotel down there. Down
Speed
Rockdale. And they go, come and see Kings of Leon. This is a Tuesday afternoon. I just finished training at the SCG. And I was like, what? So I rolled down and there would have been eight people in the Annandale, middle of the day. I'm drinking just a...
Schooners.
No, I was just having a lemon lime bitters.
of course.
And I thought they were just going to tune up. There was a couple of groupies at the back that found their way in. The band was like, we better put on a big show here.
So
they banged out their whole set. And I was like going, this is one of the most amazing things. So
that was
when they just released sort of Youth and Young Manhood. So they'd just come on and it was pretty cool.
Fantastic. I remember Sunday sessions down the Woolloomooloo, living in Chatswood, came up back from England on my gap year, moved out with some mates in Chatswood, used to go across the Woolloomooloo on a Sunday arvo, and it didn't matter who was playing. It was just young people, everyone having a crack, no fights, no drama, three or four schooners across to Harry's for a few pies and a hot dog and then cab home. I mean, that's living, isn't it?
Mate, beautiful. Now, live good. Music, it's good to see it's all bustling now and people getting into the gigs and... You know, hopefully our whole music industry sort of gets back on their feet. So it's good.
Yeah, it certainly deserves it. What about you, big fella? Do you like your live music?
Of course I do,
mate.
Who
are your favourite bands?
Like we all do. I've the best concert I've been to was Billy Joel and Elton John. Fantastic. That was us in Brisbane. They had that. They played together, and mate, they were unbelievable. But I loved Robbie Williams. He played one of those VIP ones, in Sydney somewhere, and he was so charismatic and just. You feel a part of it, the vibe and,
Oh, yeah.
He's still such an incredible entertainer, isn't
unbelievable.
He?
Unbelievable.
When he did the AFL Grand Final.
He was unbelievable. He's the man.
Yeah, he certainly is the man. My favourite concert was Spandau Ballet and they sung Gold. One of the greats.
You recreated it too, didn't you?
I did recreate it. I watched
not
them.
Quite as good.
Oh, come on.
You've been tone deaf too. Yeah.
but Andrew Bradford. Hey?
What was that?
On guitar there. Very good. Just a shout out to one of the Triple M guys.
Yeah.
Very good.
Beautiful on guitar. I went to the old Sydney Entertainment Centre and watched Tears for Fears and Spandau Ballet. Tears for Fears opened for them, but it could have been the other way around. They were both fantastic bands at the time.
You know what I would love to see live? He was so charismatic and the band was so good. Michael Hutchins, NXS.
Oh, he would have been incredible.
Yeah.
Talk about ooze charisma.
Oh, mate, unbelievable.
Are they the greatest Australian band of all time? AC/DC, NXS?
Yeah.
Top one and two?
Yep.
Yeah, incredible. And we play them here on the M, so aren't we lucky? It's an absolute treasure to be able to have this job and to play the music we play. So that's it, boys.
All right.
Yeah. See you soon.
See you soon.
Love you guys.
Bye. Gus, Jude and Wendell. Triple M's Rush Hour.